I'm Nina Jaffe, and it's time to say hello again to Marilyn Burns, math mentor to millions of math teachers. Well, maybe thousands, but all those M's sound so good. And she's author of books about math for both teachers and kids. Her latest book is called So You Have to Teach Math, Sound Advice for K-6 Teachers, written by Marilyn and Robin Silby and published by Math Solutions. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Nina.
Teacher to millions.
Well, there's an interesting math question.
That's right. Marilyn's book is in a question and answer format, and it's filled with 101 questions that both new teachers and veteran teachers might have. And then Marilyn offers answers to those questions based on more than 30 years of experience as a teacher, author, and creator of in-service workshops for teachers, where I'm sure she talks a lot and often leads discussions. So today, Marilyn, I want to ask you about the topic of leading discussions in math class, getting kids talking about math. And the first question is one that students ask a lot. Why do I have to explain my thinking? Well, how should a teacher answer students who ask that question?
And I find this question comes more from older students than younger children, because younger children are just seem to be so much more eager to tell you what's on their mind or what they think you even want to know, though it's often very, very different. The first thing I say to teachers is you've got to convince yourself as to why it's important that you hear from your students' thinking. Because once I know, and I am convinced, because when a student tell me how they're thinking, then I understand what they know, I understand where their weaknesses are, where their soft spots are, and then I can be a better teacher. And once I've got that verbalized for myself, I tell the students, this is why I ask you to talk. And I, therefore, will make this an important part of our teaching. I had a fourth grader say, why do we have to explain? We didn't have to do this last year. That was third grade math. I said, fourth grade math, this is what we do. This is how we explain. So I just changed the culture of the classroom.
Mm. Sometimes when you ask children to explain their thinking, they say, oh, I just know it.
Yeah.
What should a teacher do when kids say that?
Well, I tease. I go over and I say, if I could take off the top of your head and look inside, I can see what it is you know, but I can't. So we have to figure this out. Now, maybe let's think. Tell me something you know that will get us started. And if I can't tease a child, I say, let's turn to the class. Who can help explain what so-and-so is thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who thinks they know what so-and-so, how so-and-so is approaching this problem?
Mm-hmm.
So I keep it playful, and I keep it light, but I'm insistent, absolutely insistent.
Now, in some classrooms, in fact, many across the United States, the idea of working with inclusive classrooms and inclusion is becoming more and more common in different schools around the country. For some children, language processing itself is a problem. There are children for whom verbal thinking is not their strength. Do you have any advice for teachers who are working with those kinds of kids?
Well, first of all, I never want to humiliate or embarrass or make a child feel deficient. So if I know that a child has a problem in this way, then clearly I'm not going to, quote, put a child on the spot. At the same time, that when there are children who have these problems, it's never a secret in the class.
Right.
Everybody knows that this child has difficulty in that way, so it's a class community problem. If a child needs to better express him or herself through writing, through pictures, through relating to me one-on-one, I'll make for that time. And other children will understand why I am making those decisions. But in large part, one of the children's job is to be a full participant in the classroom, and participating means generally taking part in whole class discussions as well as all the other work that you need to do.
Right. Sometimes in a discussion, there might even be conflict. That is, one child says, well, I arrived at the answer this way, and this is what I think is the right way. Other children have another opinion about it. Have you ever seen conflict issues coming up in discussions around math, and how do you handle that?
Well, it happened to me yesterday.
Yeah.
I was teaching third graders, and Madison raised her hand and said, Carlos and I are having an argument, and the problem I had given them was they're just learning about multiplication. There are five spiders, how many legs? And they were discussing whether it was 5 times 8 or 8 times 5. And they were having a very quiet argument because I hadn't even noticed. And actually, it was an important opportunity to discuss what did make sense. I mean, talking about 5 spiders, we're talking about 5 eights, and that's generally the way we write it, is 5 times 8. But
right.
Either way you think about it, you'll get the same answer, the idea of commutativity. So I always look for differences of opinion, and I look for mistakes, and I say both of these things are opportunities. So more mistakes and more arguments. So I encourage it with passion.
Right. Okay, that really emphasizes an active learning environment.
Yes.
Some teachers get kids talking, but that can bring up new problems. For example, what can you tell a teacher who might be really nervous about understanding children when they're explaining their ideas?
I can understand being nervous because when you're teaching, it's hard to think. I know it sounds crazy, but you're in the thick of managing everything, and then a child says something that throws you. You have no idea. So what do you say? Say that again. Tell me again. Tell me some more about that. And if I really can't follow a child's reasoning, I say, can somebody help me understand so I don't make it the child's problem, make it my problem. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes it's because I'm so busy focusing on everything else I can't really think. But other times I learned for myself that too often I was listening for a response I wanted to hear rather than listening for what the child was thinking. And that's an incredible shift that I made. That was a glorious discovery. Like, who cares what I had in mind if I'm focusing on the children? And their thinking never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. Some years ago, I was teaching math individually to a young boy who was from Puerto Rico, was just learning English, but had certainly enough English to work on math, and he was just getting the idea of place values.
Yes.
And I was so proud because he'd figured out, you know, tens, ones, hundreds, but he said, well, what happens after that? And he realized if you kept going all around the room, eventually there'd be no room left, and where would place values keep going? And he figured out it would lead to infinity. And then he said to me, Miss Jaffe, well, what's after infinity? And he came up with the answer himself, which was God. So I think, you know, I had to just sit down then and realize, you know, how much I was learning from this one child. What do you do when a child has an insight that's, you know, very powerful or unique to them?
I acknowledge it. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes these insights are so brilliant. And sometimes I had a second grade boy about infinity told me that there were more numbers smaller than 100 than larger than 100. Because larger than 100, it gets all the way to infinity, as if infinity was like in Detroit or somewhere. And smaller than 100, on the other side of zero, it goes all the way to infinity, but you got those extra numbers from zero to 100. So he's saying this infinity is larger than that infinity. And in a way, for a second grader, that was brilliant. It just wasn't right. I mean, infinite is infinite. It's just uncountable in both situations. But it was so interesting. I acknowledge it. And then if the rest of the class can be interested, we'll have a discussion. Sometimes I'll say, if anybody's interested in discussing about infinity in 10 minutes, I'll call you over and you can join me in the corner for a discussion.
Right.
But I think it's so important to let children's imaginations roam. And mathematics and philosophy are so close. Somehow we've lost that connection, I think.
Right. So teachers who are heading into using class discussions and group discussions during math can almost imagine that they themselves will be learning and not be so concerned about right answers coming up.
Well, stay relaxed. You don't want to let wrong answers and erroneous ideas stand, but you do want to focus on the children because most often I have found the answers or the ideas aren't erroneous. It's just that I was asking a different question.
Right. Well, finally, let's say that you do have kids talking, but the same children are always raising their hands.
Oh, yes.
Yes. How can a teacher keep from calling on the same kids all the time?
Well, this takes a little bit of discipline to acknowledge it because basically we're so excited that someone's going to respond to us and we do know who's going to give us something which is going to be hopeful. But I set those class ground rules. Every child's job is to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Talking is a way of learning. It's a way of helping you understand. Therefore, you all need a chance. But then again, I know it's hard to talk in a whole class, so when I ask a question, how about discuss it in your groups first or discuss it with your neighbor first and then come back and then see if you can be more willing to have something to say to the larger group. So I give them support that way.
Right. So all in all, this offers children and teachers many ways to make math a deeper and more rich learning experience and learning experience.
Talk math to learn math.
Grammar for me. Thank you, Marilyn. Once again, it's been wonderful talking with you.
Thanks, Nina.